You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to Table Talk, a guide to the future of food and nutrition, brought to you by Food Matters Live. Every episode features visionaries from across the food industry, digging deep into the latest innovations and the wild ideas that are going to change our world. Today's episode continues our series of conversations about careers. This time, we're delving behind the job title of food scientist, finding out what it takes to become one and what the job involves from the inside. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, the popular image of a food scientist is probably a geek in a lab coat, something a little bit Heston Blumenthal-like with his blowtorch in his hand, but also quite possibly a lot worse, Frankenstein food creators, somebody who puts chemicals into our food. Now, I know that that's very, very different from the reality, but let's find out from my guests, because my guests today are going to blow away some of those misconceptions and lift the lid on food science, the science behind making meals taste good, look good, and perhaps even be good for your health. And we're going to learn the secret ingredient to making ready meals. Carol Bingley is Senior Associate Principal Scientist for Product and Ingredient Innovation at Reading Scientific Services. Hello there, Carol.
Hi, nice to be with you today.
Thank you so much for joining us. And we've also got Joe Tivers, Head of Food and Quality at KFC UK and Ireland. Hello there, Joe.
Hello.
So just to start off, let's start off with you, Joe. I'm excited to find out what you both do, but first of all, what is your favourite food, and are you able to eat it without thinking about the science behind it or why you're enjoying it the way you do?
It's such a good question. I actually really love simple food. So simple food made with really good and quality ingredients. So I think my favourite food would probably be something like a really good Italian pizza, really, really simple, but with incredible tomato sauce and amazing base. Mm-hmm. Or something like a burrata with Parma ham, so you've got like creamy and salty together. And I definitely think that I spend a lot of time judging food, mostly based on the ingredients, as I've just said. So when I do eat out, I'm often thinking about, am I impressed? Am I not impressed? And why is that? So I guess, yeah, I'm a bit of a nightmare to eat out with.
And I think you're absolutely right. The simple pizza, you know, everyone, you know, when you make your own pizza, you inevitably just pile stuff on. But the simplicity lets the ingredients sing out. It's a really good example. OK, Carol, what about you? What's your favourite food? And can you eat it without exploring the science behind it? Are you eating chemicals or are you eating food?
I would say favourite food is probably, and I know we're not supposed to use the word curry anymore, but...
Are we not? Oh, my God, that hadn't got through to me.
Well, I've been reading recently that we're using one term to describe a vast number of different cuisines, but I love Indian food. And I'm vegetarian, so I find that going for Indian food gives me lots of choice, whereas maybe with other places I might be a little bit more restricted. And I love eating out. It's something I try to enjoy and not kind of bring my day job too much, because it's supposed to be a pleasurable experience.
So you're not there sitting thinking about flavor volatiles and sensory perception. You're just having a scoff.
Yeah.
God, I wish I could do that. It's impossible. Impossible. Okay, well, that's good stuff. Now, can you tell me, Carol, about your job? What does a principal scientist for product and innovation do?
So at RSSL, we work for clients outside of the business. So we are consultants, and we work for a wide range of different customers, from startups all the way through to large multinationals. And so my job is partly bringing the projects in, talking to clients, writing proposals, agreeing the scope of the work, and then managing that work when it comes in. So managing the practical work. We have a development kitchen. We're also have access to a pilot plant. So it's then actually managing and doing a lot of tasting of the products that we make on a day-to-day basis, making the decision of, you know, what do we try next? How do we modify this? That's really, in a nutshell, my job.
Yeah. Okay. And we've got both you and Joe, both female. Now, I would say that I have met all of the food scientists who've been most eloquent and fun to chat to have been women. I've mainly met women food scientists who are excited about what they do and love what they're doing. And the perception that it's men, do you think that's common, Carol?
Well, certainly from my experience, food science tends to be more of a female dominated career. Right from when I was at university, the ratio was, I think, about 4-1 in terms of women to men on the course. Yeah. Certainly for most of the teams I've worked in, it's been at least a 50-50 balance, if not more female.
Yeah. Now, Joe, head of food and quality for KFCs, it sounds straightforward, but I'm sure it's not. What does your role involve?
So I am essentially responsible for helping the KFC brand to grow. So that is what we can do from a food perspective to encourage new people to visit us. So whether it's having new relevant products or sort of lighter options or actually making the products that we already have on the menu much more relevant to consumers. So I've got a team that is split into quality. So I've got one part of the team that are looking at things like nutrition or how can we improve the quality of the products that we already have? Mm. How do we face into upcoming legislation, of which there is always quite a lot? And then how do we, improve the current core products in our repertoire? So whether it's making them crispier or lower in salt or a different size and shape to kind of meet consumer needs. And then I've got a NPD team, so they're looking at new product development and everything from new burger varieties through to new LTOs or cult products, as we call them. So Zinger Popcorn, that's currently live at the moment, would be a good example of that. And then I've got a team that look to the future of the menu. So they have a menu vision and they're essentially responsible for building the strategy that allows us to make that vision a reality for our brand. So in a nutshell, it's bringing in new consumers and keeping our existing ones as well, which will help drive the growth of KFC. Mm.
And I'm interested in this concept of food science, because I think the perception of the idea that there's science in my food and there's people putting chemicals in my food, it's really pervasive. Now, anyone that really knows anything about the chemistry and physics of food knows that all matter on the planet is chemicals. But that's not the point, isn't it? People are terrified of this idea that there's a difference between natural and artificial, which I would contend there's not actually a difference. But I understand the concepts and I understand where people are getting from. The whole idea that processed food is bad, which, again, I have problems with that issue because, cooking is processing. And do you find that there's a constant balance between these concepts to try and juggle the public's perception of what is good and what is, in quotation marks, natural, and the reality, which is, drop in some cumin into something, you're adding a chemical and changing its flavour profile. Do you think that this is a difficult concept to get your head around, or do you just cruise above it and don't get involved in the sort of the minutiae of it being difficult?
Yeah, I mean, this is something I'm really, really passionate about, actually, because I spend a lot of my time trying to change people's perceptions of KFC food, because I think that in the majority, people have us wrong. I think that people assume that a lot of the food that we have in particular is really heavily processed, when actually it's far from it. So you can imagine we have fresh chicken coming into our restaurants every day from the same kind of farms that are supplying Tesco and Sainsbury's. And then we're breading it by hand and then frying it. And so whilst it seems like something that is somewhat Frankenstein food and people think that we're breeding chickens with like two heads, it really isn't the truth. And I think things like Natasha's Law have now given us the opportunity actually to share our ingredients on our packaging and make people actually see and realise that it is just normal food and normal ingredients, in many cases as you would just have at home, that goes into our food. I think it's challenging though, because actually as part of the legislation and the way you need to put ingredients on packaging, you do need to use the chemical names for things quite often. So one example would be where we've got fortified flour and you've got thiamine and niacin going into that. Mm. Can we just call it vitamin B1, vitamin B2, to almost like reassure people they are real ingredients, or ascorbic acid, let's say vitamin C. And I think sometimes it's a challenge that people are looking on ingredients decks and thinking, oh, I've never heard of all of these things. They're really scary ingredients. What are they and why do you need to use them? So, I guess I kind of really want people to realise that food is made up of a lot of chemicals, but it doesn't mean that they're bad. and quite the opposite in many cases.
Now, Jo, you probably can't give away the Colonel's secret recipe, but what is the secret you wish people knew about why we love certain takeaway flavours? How do you make us want more of the same rather than another brand of chicken?
So do you know, actually, with the original recipe, even I don't know the recipe.
And
actually, it's true that only about two people in the whole of KFC know it, and it's kept behind a vault. So, but what I do know is that actually, to develop a product that tastes really amazing, it has to be from a number of different food experiences. So it has to be immersive, and it has to be aroma, texture, appearance, like the balance of flavours you get. So that's why something like fish and chips, where you get the vinegar and the salt on the chips, just makes it such a craveable experience, because you've got such a good balance of flavours on that. And I think with the original recipe in particular, it's very distinctive because of the ingredients in it, the balance of those ingredients, actually the provenance of those ingredients, and also the chicken that it's on. And then finally, because we actually pressure fry it as well, which gives a very different both texture and flavour profile to just like a fried chicken that you would cook in a fryer in a pub, for example. So actually all of the elements that go into it make it really craveable. And then the key to that is then making sure that you're consistent and distinctive. So once you've thought about the whole sensory experience, ensure that your product then is always the same, so people know what they're getting, and that it's really, really distinctive and only coming from you. And then people will crave for it because they'll have a great experience every time they come. It's the perfect balance, perfect taste, texture, aroma, and they will want more.
And before we get too excited about just the KFC-ness of it and salivate, I think what's interesting is that you're mentioning this thing which is called cross-modal perception. It's the idea that the taste experience when you eat some food isn't just about tastes, which is you experience on your tongue. It's not just about smells you experience in your nasal passage. It's also about sound. It's about the context within which you eat it and the immersive experience. So this brings us to another sort of aspect of this, which is, you know, psychology. So if you're a psychologist, there is a role for you in the food industry as well, and which, you know, you don't have to just go off and become a therapist. It's fine, you can have a proper job. Okay, Carol, tell us about some of the projects that you've worked on. Fill in the gaps a bit. Can you describe the process? You know, so maybe take a job that was particularly fun or interesting that offered a challenge. What happens? A project is brought to you, and then as it unfolds, what goes on?
Yeah, so no two projects are the same, but usually if I think about product development project, the client will come to us with a brief. And if I think of some of our startup companies, these are people quite often who have no experience in the food industry. So their needs are fairly high in terms of the support they require. So
there's a fair amount of nurturing as well as information control.
Yeah. And that, you know, they might be asking for everything because they don't appreciate that sometimes you have to make a compromise. They'll lay out, you know, what they want in terms of the taste and texture of the product, the nutritional profile of the product. Often we find that the clients haven't really thought about the manufacturing part, so we have to sort of bring that in and educate them that that's something that you need to think about really early on in the development process. There's no point in developing a great product and then not being able to make it anywhere. Once we've agreed all of that and we've got to sort of a place where we all think we know what we're going to develop, we then start to source ingredients. And I find the ingredient suppliers are a fantastic resource for information and advice. So I try and build up my network as much as possible, talking to those ingredient suppliers, because they, you know, they know their ingredients so well. And they're talking to lots of people all of the time, and they're built, you know, they can bring in those insights from across the industry.
So just in case somebody who's listening doesn't quite know what we're talking about, we're actually talking about the ability for certain ingredients to actually achieve either a flavour or a texture. You know, some things work and some things don't, and you've got to match the base ingredient with the manufacturing process. So there's engineering involved. There are huge amounts of different aspects of science. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And I've been working quite a lot in the plant-based vegan sector recently. So looking for the right protein, and it has to be, a lot of companies are looking for allergen-free. So they're looking for non-soya, non-wheat-based proteins. Then we've got to try and achieve the texture. You often you're using extruded protein, you have to hydrate it, you've got to chop it, you've got to form it, you've got to get it all hold together when it's cooked. So there's a lot going on, and there's not an off-the-shelf solution. It's really putting all that information together from my experience and then from the experience of the other people that I can access.
And with if you can give us an example of a project, you know, I would imagine that actually having something to eat, something to actually try, the first prototype, is actually probably quite a long way down the line in a lot of these projects, isn't it?
It can be. If I think about a project we did, probably we started about 4 or 5 years ago, I think we ended up developing about 170 recipes in the end.
For one product?
For one product. So some of the very early ones really weren't quite hitting the mark. You know, it took us a while to get there. But what we do find is really helpful is trying to keep our clients kind of involved all the way along. So not sort of disappearing off for 3 months and then suddenly turning up and saying, there you go, that's your product. It's kind of making sure that they can taste as regularly as possible and give their input and help to guide the process.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting from what you're saying is the amount of different areas. That there's material science here, there's engineering to do with production lines and how they work, there's the chemistry of how products go together, you know, when there's the physics of cooking and extruding and all these different aspects. Then you've got to look at dietary aspects as well, and that's all about biology. So it's a huge multidisciplinary area, and so there are lots of different skills that are important to it, aren't there?
Absolutely. At RSSL, we have lots of analytical labs, so I can draw on the expertise. We've got a physical sciences lab, so if I need to understand how something snaps or what the rheology of something is, so that's very important when you're thinking about putting something down a production line.
Just tell us what rheology is.
Viscosity, the texture, the way something flows, those sorts of aspects of a product. And, you know, they're critical because, you know, these products often have to go through pipes and be deposited onto belts and you know, they've got to behave in a certain way to be able to be formed and processed. So being able to draw on those colleagues within the business to help me measure those aspects of the product are important. We've got microscopists as well. They can look at the microstructure of the food and understand how the ingredients are dispersed within the matrix. If you've got an emulsion, how are the fat droplets, you know, where are they sitting? How are they, you know, have you got sort of big pools of fat, or have you got a nice kind of well-emulsified product? And all those things are going to be critical for product stability as well, because that's the other thing that's really important to bear in mind when we're developing products is what's the shelf life? How can we optimize that that stability over the product life.
So now we're delving into the specificity of this that I absolutely adore. I've no idea if our listeners do. So let's move on as well. But that's just to say that there are a vast range of skills that are appropriate in a vast industry with lots of different aspects. I'm just going to butt in here to say that if you're thinking about starting a career in food science, then a good place to start is Food Matters Career Week. From the 23rd to the 25th of November, Food Matters are bringing together students and recent graduates with top global food and drink companies and experts for an exciting, packed agenda on careers, tips and skills. And lots of the event will be available on demand afterwards. Go to the Food Matters website for more information, and it could be the first step to creating a product which becomes a national favourite. OK, back to Carol and Joe to find out about their career paths. So how about the journey to getting where you are today? So Joe, you've worked across a variety of brands and products. Can you tell me about your career path? What you studied, maybe what you wish you'd studied, and what led you to do what you're doing now?
Yeah, so I guess I started out with a love of eating food. I guess I kind of thought about what could I do as a career which involved me being able to eat a lot of food. And I guess at the same time, just also having a love of science and a kind of a family history, I guess, in science as well. So how could I put the two together? And quite obviously, food science is the right way to go about doing something like that. So I've always been fascinated by the actual science behind food, even from when I was quite young. So I have memories of trying to make fudge at home and just being like so frustrated that I couldn't get the texture right.
And that's a real, real scientific aspect, that is.
I know, right? And actually, now that I look back at it and think, God, you just needed a sugar thermometer because you would have been able to crack it, but actually not knowing anything about that at the time and just being really, really interested. Mm. I left school as the person most likely to design ready meals to go into outer space.
Brilliant.
Genuinely, that's in my my end of year book. And then I then really thought about which brands do I really love and who do I want to work for. So within that, I had Sainsbury's because we always shopped at Sainsbury's and I love Sainsbury's. Yeah. I also grew up with KFC being the treat that my family were allowed because my parents hated McDonald's because they perceived it was really processed and not great to give to kids, whereas they could see that KFC was proper chicken on the bone, it was real stuff, they let us have it. So I remember when things like the Tower Burger launched and remember being about them being really exciting. And then Brakes, just because I grew up in Kent, Brakes was the local big food business and I was just like, I was fascinated by them. So then as I've got older, I have been more interested in like the leadership and the overall business strategy that goes along with food. But that's kind of where I started. And I was lucky that as I've kind of gone through, I've had the experiences of everything from designing dog treats with Mars for Pedigree when I was still a student. And so thinking about a lot of things, actually, Carol was just talking around. So texture analysis of dog treats and extrusion yeah. technology of dog treats and how they helped make dog treats work to clean dogs' teeth and how important that was, all the way through to finally getting to properly develop ready meals for Waitrose and thinking about the science of actually having a blooming good stock in ready meals and what a difference that makes to the overall eat at the end and what were the right starches to ensure that the bechamel sauce on your lasagna kind of held up to microwave cooking or oven cooking. So yeah, it's kind of all of those experiences. And I think actually in the food industry, one of the key things is having like a really broad experience. Yeah. And then as you move up, it's being able to ask the right questions because you have the experience to ask the right questions. So yeah, that's kind of like my potted history.
Excellent. No, I think that's fantastic. Now, okay, so there are two things that I would imagine quite a few of our listeners who are interested in a career in food science might be asking. One is purpose and one is money. So you've been working a fair bit in plant-based and healthy alternatives to things. And a lot of people, when they're choosing careers at the moment, which I'm sure was less so when I sort of hit the job market, is, you know, how can I make a difference? What's going to be my purpose so I can go home and speak to my kids and say I've made the world a better place? Now, I know that KFC is bringing out plant-based and healthy alternatives to things. Is that important? Is that a factor that should influence people in their choice of careers? And is there a lot of availability of potential to make a difference in the industry?
Yes, absolutely. I think you also have to question what is your making a difference when you go in. So it might be that you're developing wholesome products that are going to bring nutrients to people, or it might actually being able to provide sustaining meals for people on lower incomes, or it might be the development of packaging for the food that is sustainable and allows you to progress for the future. So I guess I would ensure that people really consider what their purpose is and what they are interested in looking at. And then certainly from a business perspective, ongoing sustainability, climate change, inequality, all of those things are the key aspects that any business is looking at for the future at the moment, because businesses that aren't looking to that just won't survive. So they really are fundamental. So I think any business that people are interested in joining or looking at will find that all of these things are just like their bread and butter, and you talk about it every day and you're thinking about it every day. It's not even something that's kind of pulled out as unusual.
Yeah.
It's the norm. So
it's part of how everyone works now. So you can go to the pub after work and say, I might have made a difference today. We're trying to do something really positive.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other side of this, Carol, is I don't know how to put this really, but money, you know, is it, and I'm not just saying how much do you get paid, but is there a good availability of jobs in the market? Are there a lot of positions that are yet to be filled? How easy is it to move up from a starting point to earning a bit more, for having a little bit more control, moving up to management? Is the industry flexible? Does it need to be more so? How did you find it?
I would say that yes, there's plenty of opportunity. When I first started out, people used to say to me, everyone will always need food. And I think, you know, through the pandemic, it really brought it to light, because the food industry was one of the industries that we all needed. And, you know, right at the beginning, everyone was so focused on, are we going to have enough food? And even now, you know, we've got all the challenges with fuel shortages and things. And again, it's, are we going to be able to get food to the shops? And it's obviously critical to everyone. And I think as an industry, there will always be plenty of opportunities for people coming in to work in food. And again, I think there's plenty of flexibility. I think the variety of different jobs that are out there. And so, you know, I've gone down one path, but with a food science degree, that doesn't limit you to just going into product development. There's plenty of other roles or different areas that you can go into. So I've actually stayed pretty much with the same company for most of my career. But because I work with all these different clients outside, I'm always working on different products. So it hasn't felt like I've just been in one job for all these years. But, you know, obviously moving companies, you get to work with different products, you get to see different cultures. We still have a reasonable amount of food production in the UK. So there's the option if you want to stay here, but then also obviously moving to other countries, there's plenty of food production going on all around the world, growing areas, things like the precision fermentation, the cell culture, those sorts of areas, which are really cool and kind of exciting. If that's what people are into, you know, there's certainly lots to get your teeth into there.
Yeah. And that's quite interesting area, isn't it? Do you think you can be a hippie and a food scientist at the same time?
Yeah, I don't see why not. You know, I think you'd probably select certain companies, certain brands that you'd feel more comfortable with. But yeah.
See, this is what I'm really interested in from your point of view, because you're working with lots of different companies. Now, in the UK at the moment, we have a very exciting startup culture. A bunch of people come together and say, do you know what? We could make a change with this thing. And I see a huge amount of these people trying out a new idea. Now, whether they work or not is almost immaterial. It's the fact that there is an innovation culture of people trying out a new idea and giving it a go. Presumably, that means that, as well as, I mean, you're both in large organisations, but there's also lots of smaller organisations, if that's more of your fit, if you don't really fit into a corporate culture, which I certainly don't, I've got a terrible problem with authority. And if that's the way, do you see that there are loads of startups that you can become part of, or would a food scientist not really be in a small startup? Would they go to you to find the food science?
Some of the startups come to me and they've no experience in the food industry. Others are people who've worked in the food industry and decide to branch out on their own, and they've seen a gap and they have a pretty good idea how they can plug that. Mm-hmm. Yes, and you know, some of these grow pretty quickly as well. So they, you know, if you can get in there while they're still kind of two or three people, then there's great opportunity for those brands, that, you know, those startups that are successful.
I think there's a big culture of that, isn't there? Okay, now, Joe, in your route to where you are now, is there anything that you wish you knew when you started, or anything that you thought, if I'd have gone a different route through this, then I might be in a different place? I mean, obviously, you're doing a fantastic job as it is, but would there have been a clear route to it, a different subject to study, a different company to start with? What secret can you divulge to us?
I guess I've always personally been very clear about who I wanted to work for and kind of what I wanted to do.
Which is quite unusual, I have to say. I mean, your clarity is extraordinary.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, it is. And I know where I want to be next as well. So I really have that clarity. I think that one of the kind of critical things that allow you to go from being just maybe a kind of standard manager to a leader is maybe a broader strategic commercial acumen that maybe I wish I'd picked up a little bit earlier. So my advice always to people now is that definitely be a expert in your subject, but ensure that you know where your subject fits in a business. So for example, as a product developer, you may know all of the detail around the recipe and the product that you're developing, but you have to ask why you're developing that product. And you have to be very clear about the role that it plays in the business. And ultimately, the business is trying to grow or it's trying to make money. And actually, the difference between a very good product developer, and that might be a good food scientist, to a brilliant food scientist is someone who knows how they fit into the organization. And they'll be able to do the right challenge. They'll do the right testing of the product. They'll question the ingredients that go into it, maybe the costs or whether a cleaner ingredient is included. And they'll be much more strategic. So I think that would be one of the aspects. And I said it earlier, but actually having very broad expertise would be something I'd always recommend to people. So try a bit of everything and work out what you love and maybe what you don't, and be clear about that on your journey.
Yeah, and be clear about it, which has clearly been your skill. You've been really flipping clear about exactly what you're going to do. I'm going to do this. Give me this job. I want it. Okay. All right,
I guess as well, I did do work experience when I was younger. So things like I thought for a while I wanted to be an environmental health officer. I did work experience. I was like, it's not quite for me. I wanted to be a dentist. It's not quite for me. So I think there's also something around sort of exploring areas and just working out and trying to figure out what you want to do.
And there are lots of routes to getting to where you are. Now, Joe, you're pretty senior, so this is a strange question to ask. But right, let's posit this scenario. You're about to go off and set up JFC instead of KFC. On your own, and you want somebody to fill your role. What is it that you're looking for in someone to take your role? What will you be asking, and what do you want the applicants to offer you to take over your job?
I think about this a lot already, because one of my roles as a leader in KFC is to build up a bench. So both for myself, but also people within my team. So we're always developing people up. I think for me, for someone to come in and sort of take over my role would be firstly like a people first approach. So
which is interesting when you're dealing so much in science, but you're absolutely right. It's the communication of that that's so much more important.
It is. And it's about having the right team. So ensuring that this person could also collate a team that would be really fixated on an end vision and all be jointly passionate about achieving that goal. So people number one, they'd have to be a great people leader. And then they have to be able to step back and look to the future. So it's both looking at trends, but also behaviours behind the trends. So an example of that might be if people like the veganism at the moment. So that being actually more of a behaviour now, but having started as a trend. But why are people wanting to become vegan, and what might be the next vegan? So if people are being vegan because they want to reduce their carbon footprint on the world, then actually, is there a wider trend there about what the role of the way people eat affect climate change or others? So I think you need to be able to be quite a visionary, look to the future, and like challenge things that are happening, and then be a bit creative at the same time. And just ask the right questions. Definitely, I'm a big fan of asking questions, of being curious for the future, but also of the team being able to kind of upskill themselves by asking questions of people.
So, Carol, you're about to leave Reading Scientific Services to set up Carol Scientific Services instead. What would you be asking for the applicants for your job?
I would say technical curiosity. So really wanting to know why you use certain ingredients, what do they do, what happens if you put them together in certain ways. So always trying to understand what's going on in the product. Also, I think being able to cope with lots of different projects all at the same time. I'm working for a number of different clients all at once. They all think that they are the most important client, and so
and of course they are.
Absolutely. So trying to balance all those requests and make sure that we meet all the different deadlines is quite challenging, and does require a certain agile mindset, I guess, in having to constantly kind of change priorities and be able to adapt on a daily basis to whatever's coming in. And I guess really just the ability to work as a team as well, because we're within my team, it's quite a small team, but we really rely on each other. And I guess this is, I mean, it's probably not unique to my role, but, you know, being able to communicate with the team, make sure they understand what I'm asking of them. If they don't understand, being able to come back and have that conversation. So it's having that kind of open dialogue with the team and making sure that we just get everything done as quickly as we can and as you know, to the very best of our ability, because the, you know, these clients are spending money with us and they do have high expectations.
It's interesting that you're both talking about teamwork and communication, and rather than the idea of being, you know, an ultra nerd who can you know, do an experiment and work it out, which is really exciting. I just want to butt in to mention a couple of other editions of Table Talk which you might enjoy. We've got one on encouraging diversity in the workplace, one on careers in packaging and the fight for sustainability, and one on food apprenticeships. All of these are on the website. Have a look at foodmatterslive.com. Now back to Carol and Joe. So, Carol, is there any particular piece of advice for people who are thinking about a career in food science? What should they be doing? I mean, should they be watching telly? Should they be keeping an eye on food trends? Should they be going to virtual events like Food Matters Live? Should they be finding out what people are doing on TikTok? What? How do they prepare themselves to have all the information at their disposal to be brilliant in the food science world?
I would say having the interest in food, so reading about food, cooking food at home, you know, watching cookery programs, all those sorts of things, of just, you know, learning about food and how you can impact on the flavor of food, or how you can kind of cook things in a different way to give a different experience. That sort of thing is certainly for the sorts of people we're looking for. Having that passion for food really is really key, because if you're not really interested in how something tastes or how it looks or how it smells, then it's hard for you to get up every day and feel excited about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so much a big part of what people are looking for in careers. Joe, the same question to you, really. You know, obviously you love your food. Is that an important part of it, or can you just be a nerd who likes rheology?
You can do both. The food industry is just so diverse. I think actually understanding yourself a bit better and understanding what you love about the food industry. So is it that you're really interested in the food science, but also that actually buying might be interesting? Or would you like to be working on manufacturing lines to fine-tune recipes to make sure they go down the lines better? I think trying to understand a little bit more about what roles there are available, but also what might suit you the best, and explore those, as well as exploring all of the different brands that are out there and maybe considering whether there are some that you have an affinity to and some that you would feel really passionate about working for. Because even then, if you're passionate enough, you'll do pretty much anything in the food aspect for certain brands. So it gives you just like a really nice routine to try some different things.
So my favourite food on the planet is Wotsit. So maybe I should get a job making Wotsit. I love a bit of extrusion.
Yeah.
Okay, so last question for both of you then. Start with you, Joe. Exciting projects coming up? I mean, I know that new food projects are always top secret, but what sort of things are you excited to be working on at KFC? Is there something particular that you're fascinated by at the moment?
Oh, yeah, lots of things. My team will be like, oh my goodness, she's always so excited about lots of things. I'm really excited about just getting a lot of our, what we call our core, to being the best it can be. So whilst that might not seem really, really sexy because it's not hugely innovative, new and flashy, actually really diving into the detail of what makes our core so brilliant, so our fried chicken, and then looking at where we can optimise that. How can we have products that meet new need states for consumers? How can we have products that bring in new consumers? How can we ensure that we're setting ourselves up for future success against things like vegan or carbon neutrality, or even the rise of things like delivery? So what kind of foods go better on delivery, and how can we work to that? So we have a very clear vision, and we're literally working through category by category to ensure that we achieve where we want to be within sort of 3 years.
Fantastic.
So lots of fun stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Carol, any particular projects or products that are on the horizon for you that you're excited about?
Yes, I'm working on a range of vegan products at the moment. We've got dips, sauces, cheese alternatives. We're moving into sweet products. They're all based on some patented technology. And hopefully they're going to be launched early in the new year. We've been working on them for about a year now and taking them right from sort of the very early concept through scale up and manufacturing. So I'm really excited to get those over the final hurdle and see them on the shop shelves, because I have to say, as part of my job, the biggest buzz for me is going into the supermarket and seeing a product I've worked on sat there able for people to buy.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Okay, well, Carol Bingley and Joe Tivers, thank you so, so much for joining us. It's been absolutely fascinating. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from editions with diet experts to food security. Recent highlights include editions on food communications and protein science. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatterslive.com. Thank you so much for listening.